I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. Steve, I've seen some stuff on social media around sobriety dates. Do you keep your sobriety date because you have relapse? Do you not? And anytime there are things like that that pop up on social media, man, the comments become World War III. So I figured we'd talk a little bit about sobriety dates and the importance of it, or maybe not the importance and the impediment. Tell me a little bit about, from an AA perspective, why do we do sobriety dates?
Well, I just think it's that line of demarcation, right? Of when we talk about in AA, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. So that date is sort of like, you know, that what it was like, that before you came in and you got serious about your sobriety and you stopped drinking. I just think that's all it is. To some people, it's really, it's a sacred thing. And to other people, it means a lot less. I sort of fall in that it means a lot less to me. I mean, a date is a date. Holy thing. And they're very protective of it. So it's you know, I can imagine what the comments looked on social media. Listen, I belong to a group on social media on Facebook called Pizzaholic, and it's about pizza, and it's vicious. It's like, I can't, it's amazing.
Really?
It's amazing the comments on there. It's just social media. But sobriety dates are, you know, like I said, there's different people who feel like if you have a sniff of a drink or you're at a wedding and you pick up the wrong drink, that some people will change their sobriety date. They will. I have a little bit of a different view on that.
Well, I won't do my trick that I was going to do on that Pizzaholics site and throw a DiGiorno on there.
Oh, people do it.
Just to screw with people.
People do it all the time. I mean, they'll put some stuff, like, they'll literally put gas station pizza on. They're like, hey, this isn't bad. And it's funny. I laugh at the comments. Because social media is funny because you can't tell when somebody's trying to be funny or they're serious sometimes. So. It's just,
no, you can't.
It's just a funny thing. Back to the subject, you know, like I said, we were talking before this, and, you know, I've talked about my relapse on here. I had stopped drinking in 95. And in my head, my sobriety date early on, because my sobriety date was like the 5th or 6th of August in 1995. And when I finally got back to the meeting that was my home group at that time, and I finally was able to look back at that old book, I realized I was wrong. Like, it was like August 13th, right? I mean, it was within, right? But still, like, that's, I couldn't even remember what my sobriety date was. And I've always felt that way. Like, I shared that, you know, my anniversary now is July 27th, 2010. I don't think about it much. I don't think about it much. I am a firm believer in, you know, what's my sobriety like today versus,
yep,
versus, you know, how long I've been sober. Because that's my challenge, right? That is my challenge. And I always need to be careful about how I'm behaving today and what I'm doing for my sobriety today.
That's a much better way of doing it. My sobriety date was much more important in my first year. We'll back up a little bit on this.
Sure.
We'll back up a bit. There's even like a debate on what the sobriety date should be. I probably picked the wrong date. My date I picked was the last day I had a drink. There are some thoughts that it has to be the first day you're completely sober, 24 hours after. But I picked the 21st of March because I didn't know any better. And I just haven't changed it to the 22nd. It's not that big deal to me. There are some people who do it one way. Some people do it another way. And then there are some people who get pissy either way. So it kind of is important to look back. It was important my first month. To me, it's not as important. It does keep me in check in some ways that I think about if I started drinking, I would lose that. Mm-hmm. So it is another tool to keep you on track. I saw something, that social media post that I saw. I know the person and I reached out to them saying, I don't know why you're getting such hate. And a lot of times it is the AA people on social media.
Yeah.
Like, you AA people, those of us, be nicer. Be nicer. Yeah. Don't be as rigid. You're not winning anybody. You're not winning anybody to our cause when you do that. But the AA people can a lot of times be kind of nasty on social media. I have seen some people who have like a one day slip up and they keep their sobriety date. So my thought here is you don't want to be so rigid that it becomes an impediment to coming back. That can be the case. Okay, I lost my sobriety date. Why should I get sober? If I'm going to have to lose that, why come back? That's not good. If you're going to have a relapse, the preference is it's a one-time event, one day, and you get back on the horse.
Yeah, I know people who've picked their sobriety dates. Like they truly like, oh, I picked January 1st. Like literally they picked that date because whether it's because they're not sure exactly when that last drink was, but they, I don't know. But they literally pick a date. And here's the other thing that I always like is like, I'm a member of AA if I say I'm a member of AA, right? That's the way I treat it. Like if I say, no, if nobody else says it, if I say I'm a member, then I'm a member. Nobody picks my sobriety date but me. And now the only thing I could tell you that if like you're really coming in and you're really beat up, maybe a sponsor helps you work that out, okay, in the AA program. But the truth is I'm responsible for that. So therefore, nobody can tell me what's right and what's wrong. I mean, I'm a firm believer that, like I said, you know, I'm not, you know, I've shared it here. I share it all the time in my meetings. Like, I'm not a big rules follower. So the more you tell me I have to do something that way, the more I'm going to push back and tell you, no, I don't have to do that. And especially in AA, where we have all these traditions that spell out, you know, what's right and what's wrong and what's acceptable and what's not. So, you know, I don't get caught up in that at all. I'm not even for a second of what somebody's sobriety date or whether they want to, you know, change it. We have a person that we both know who comes to a woman, right? Who comes to the Monday night meeting on occasion. She shared with me, I'll talk to her and you know who she is, but you know, I'll talk to her after a meeting and stuff. And she told me like years ago, like she went out and she had a half a drink, like, or had a drink. She had a drink, purposely had a drink. And she was bummed out about that, you know, and that was it. She just had that one drink, never got a buzz, but had that drink. She didn't change her sobriety date. She decided afterwards that she was going to keep her sobriety date. I'm not going to judge her on that, right? It's like, that's up to her.
Right.
You know, so if she wants to do that, that's fine. And she, you know, she does her program, whatever it is, she helps people. She does everything else. So I'm gonna criticize her because she picks a dirt. It's foolish to me. Actually, like you said, it could be detrimental to people coming to our program, right? Getting the help that they need. So if you want to drive people away, one of the ways you can do that is be really picky on little shit like this.
I have been tagged by managers in the past at work as being very black and white, which I was. And because I was so sick of new managers that I go to saying, hey, you're very black and white, I have learned to be open-minded and see the gray on everything. I've had to train myself in what's the gray here? Where am I being black and white? And that comes over now to AA. And there's a lot of people in AA who have black and white thinking. And I think I understand it is I have to follow these rules to a T or I will get drunk. Even if I'm 29 years sober, I got to follow the path, the way it says exactly, or I will get drunk. I don't think that's the case. And maybe it's the case for some people that you got to follow the letter of the law or you're going to get drunk. That's not the way it is for me. That thinking can come through to criticism of other people that you have to do it this way. If you've had that half a drink, you now have to start to go back to zero, not just sobriety date. You have to start as though you are brand new to the program. You got to do a 90 and 90. You have to find a new sponsor. You have to get chips every month. You have to start as though you are the same as the person coming out of detox for the first time. The knowledge doesn't go away. From even coming in as a new person, I never saw the relapsing person the same as me. I'm learning this for the first time. They know something.
Right.
There's, to me, it's a head start. That's way too black and white. And if I relapse and I got to start to zero, back to zero, as though I'm a brand new newcomer, I'm much less likely to stop drinking again.
You know, a relapse or a slip or whatever you want to call it, or this person, that we're talking about.
And I am, and to clarify, I am talking about that type of relapse of the one day right. job, maybe not even getting drunk. I've got the beer on in front of me.
Right.
And I realize immediately I've made a mistake. This is not like a 6 month run.
And I will say that it's probably something that if you're serious about your sobriety, you need to look at, right? I don't think there's any question is like you would ask yourself, why did this happen? And you may want to do some work again. And we're talking about our program, basically sobriety dates, you know, typically an AA thing, but I'm sure other programs have them too and they use them too. But in our program that we would say, hey, you need to figure out why that happened, right? You need to find the underlying cause. Right. We talk about it all the time. I thought my problem was that I drank too much, and I realized that my problem was more sophisticated than that. There was just underlying emotional stuff that I drank to cover up and all that kind of stuff. So today I realized like the drinking is a solution to my problems, or what I think is a solution to my problems, not the problem. So if I pick up a drink, or if I have a slip, or even, you know, hopefully for me, I start thinking that a drink is possible for me, I need to think like, what's going on? Like, why am I feeling that today? So there is work to be done, but I agree with you 100% that I don't need to start from the beginning. Now maybe I'll choose to, like maybe as an AA person, I'll choose to say, you know something, it's been 7 years since I've gone through the steps. Let me talk to my sponsor or another trusted member in AA, and I'll go through the steps again, right? Like, but again, that's on me,
right?
That's my choice if I want to do that. I've had some behavior stuff going on recently that it's got me thinking that maybe I need to, it's got me thinking I need to do a little bit different, some things different in my sobriety. And I've been a little bit resistant to that. I'm not sure why, but eventually I think I'll come and do that. But you're right. And the other thing, like at our Friday night meeting last night, there was a lot of talk about just what you said, people like talking, I need to follow this program exactly or else I'm at risk of drinking, right? I don't feel that way either. I feel like I need to really pay attention to it and I need to address certain things. But I didn't come to AA to be just constantly thinking about AA. I didn't. I came here to sort of do it, figure it out. I have some tools, you know, just an analogy. I have a whole bunch of tools. I have mechanic tools. I have carpentry tools. You know, I have tools that I need when I need them. I don't walk around with a tool belt all the time, right? If I need them, I can go get them. That's my program. If I need these things, I'll go take them out and I'll try to work on them. And hopefully, that's for me, that's going to happen before I pick up a drink. It's an interesting concept, but like I said, it's such an individual thing that we need to be, you know, our program's about attraction, not promotion, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to talk to people and let people come in and let them find their way. We at our Friday night meeting, we got like three or four guys with under a year of sobriety. As a matter of fact, last night we had this brand new guy, had never seen him before, and he comes in and sits down, and I shake his hand and say hi to him, and he sits down, and first he was sitting away from the group, and then he joined the tables where we got him, and then probably a quarter of the way, a third of the way in the meeting, he got up and left. And I was like, that's interesting, right? Never really said anything and got up and left. And I have no idea why. I hope he comes back. But something wasn't working for him last night. I mean, we just have to be open to people coming in and going. And maybe he's not ready to come in and be, you know, be receptive to how other people feel about these things. And there was another guy there who talked about it. He said he's been in and out of these rooms he said, I don't know how many 24-hour chips I've had in the last 18 years. That tells you how long he's been trying to get sober, right? I don't know. You know, I mean, he needs to find his way. He needs to pick his sobriety date, and he needs to find his program like the rest of us did.
That stuff's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that I love about the 12-step program. Is one of those things of the study of the people it doesn't work for. Or the people it doesn't work for, yet they continue to go for years and years and years. Why is that? Or somebody who is constantly sitting on the outer rim, never gets involved, or leaves halfway through the meeting.
Right.
I don't feel judgment for somebody like that. I'm just honestly curious.
Me too.
What is it that repelled you?
And I don't know, maybe this person had a phone call that I didn't see him check his phone or anything. Maybe
could be.
Maybe the person had something he had to go do, right? It just seemed odd to me. You don't usually see that. And like I said, I love, you know, for me, when I go to my meetings, one of the things I've been, you know, a little bit, it's been bothering me is like my two main meetings I go to, the Monday night and the Friday night, there hasn't been a lot of new people coming in. We haven't gotten a lot of new people. Monday night, we had them for a while, and lately I haven't seen some of our new people come back. It's really nice to see new sobriety come in and to mm-hmm. watch people go through the growth of getting sober, changing their life, right? I mean, it's really, really a nice thing to watch. So I've enjoyed that. It's been important to me to see some of that, and it makes going to these meetings a lot better. It just adds a vibrance to, you know, to a meeting that you don't get when it's always the same people who have, you know, upwards of 5 to 10 or 15 or 20 years of sobriety.
I agree as well. I like seeing new people, and I like seeing them stick and seeing their growth. That means a lot more to me. It's nice to see you, Steve, at the meeting, but I know your story and I know the things that you're going through, and it's not as impactful for me anymore.
Right.
I'm close to 10 years. I've got the experienced person aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I need to be reminded of what those feelings were like up front. That's where I feel the most at home and motivated. I look at the chips here this way. So a lot of people get stuck on the sobriety date. With the chips, for the most part, they're not really about you. I'd say that first year is about you. Mm-hmm. It's a goal set to get to the first year. After that, it's really about the newcomer.
Yeah.
If you've got a 35-year chip, it's not about, yay, I got 35 years. It's for you to show the newcomer you can get 35 years, nights and weekends included.
Yep. I agree 100%. Listen, I've said it, and I don't say this as bragging or anything. I really don't. Maybe the first time, I don't remember. Like I said, I don't even remember my first sobriety date. So maybe I don't remember at all, but I don't remember ever taking monthly chips. I don't. I certainly never took them when I came back. They just didn't mean enough to me to take. I mean, I just felt like, I don't know if it was, I felt like, oh, I should be sober. I don't know what it was. It was just something I never collected. I agree that, you know, there was something about getting that first year and, you know, the second year and really doing it. But today I really don't play a lot of attention on them. I like to pick up a couple chips, a couple coins, whatever you want to call them, and then I like to pass them on to guys I have sponsored. That's what I like to do. Like when some of the guys I've sponsored have anniversaries, I will typically give them one of my old coins. Like I always try to keep a couple of them, you know. And then when they do it, and I try to do that as sort of a tradition or something like that. But other than that, I mean, my coins, I have an area like when I work with another alcoholic, I have a partially finished basement. That's where we go. And I have an old secretary's desk down there that has all my AA stuff in it, right? I have extra big books, extra books. I have Joe and Charlie forms for doing the steps. I have all kinds of stuff, and it's all down in there. And that's where my chips are. Right, they're down there. They're in that thing. I don't keep them on a, you know, I don't keep them on a chain. I don't keep them on a book cover. They're just downstairs. So, and that's me again. That's a personal thing. I know people do it. They proudly display them, like they have these book covers for, you know, the big book and the 12 and 12. And there's a spot for your chip. They probably do that, or they put it on a key ring or something. It's just not how I roll with my stuff. It's a little bit less important to me than it is other people.
Mine are in a drawer.
Yeah.
The moment I get them, I throw them in that drawer, and that's where they stay. And I don't even think about them. I still have my monthlies. They're in there, but I never look at them ever. I'm thinking about this now because I have a big anniversary coming up in a couple of months. That'll mean a big thing for me. Getting to 10 years is sort of like that next big thing. You get to 10. Somebody told me early on that you're a newcomer until you're sober for 10 years. And he was kidding around. But I thought about that of like, okay, I'm in a different class once you get to 10 years. The likelihood of relapse is much lower. But I think this is worth a conversation around what's the quality of the sobriety, not what's your date. I know some people who've got 20 years and they have the worst sobriety ever. I don't want to be that person.
Right.
I'll tell you an app that I use. I use the, because I have an Apple Watch now, I use the Apple Health app a lot. And one of the functions in there is you can log your mood right now, and then it'll log it in the past. Hmm. And I think of logging that pretty frequently. I think about it more when I'm in a bad mood.
Right.
And when you log your mood, it gives you why. And I try and think about it when I'm in a good mood and put it in why. And basically, I can do an inventory on the spot. And I think about it that way. I'm not in a good mood. Why am I not in a good mood? Gives me an opportunity to log that and not only think about what can I do to improve that right now, I can go back into the past and see what are some of the other health trends that were going on. Did I exercise that day?
Right.
Did I get enough sleep that day? It can now go in and I can cross-reference other things to figure out what is causing my mood to be the way it is and what helped improve it. So little things like that can help improve your sobriety, and you can use tools like that, because to me, that changing sobriety date is not about some catastrophic moment. It's about a bunch of little moments that come together that become a cascade.
Just listening to you talk about that app and you using it in the way you do, it just shows you, like, to me, I don't think I'd have the discipline to use that, but it's just such a great way to do it. Like you said, it's such a great way for you to be able to look back and go, hey, I was feeling this way, and I was feeling this way because of this. Because the truth is, what we do as a program is we look back, we do a fourth step, and we do a personal inventory, right? And the way that personal inventory works is just what you said. You could do some of that, a spot check, right? Is we identify patterns in our life, right? And that's typically what happens. I'm angry because of this. And if you do a really good inventory, you're going to find that a lot of your things are over the same. You're pissed off over the same feeling that you might be having. So for you to be able to do that and log it, right, on a daily basis, and you'd be able to see, oh, I'm upset or I'm sad or I'm down because of this, you can find that pattern. And you can make subtle changes or big changes in your life that will allow you not to get stuck there, right? Because that's what we want. Like, that's my problem of getting stuck in a place that I can't see a way out of, that I become so down about it or bitter about it that I want to numb that feeling. That's what I did my whole life, right? And today I don't want to do that anymore. And today I have other tools. Listen, my tool is going to a meeting and sharing a lot of stuff with guys, especially my Friday night meeting, which is a men's meeting. So I can go there and share pretty much anything that's going on in my life. And I felt like I had to do that last night with something. And I told him, like, I don't want to share this, but, you know, I will. And so I'm able to put it out there. Part of that is me just shining a light on some of my behaviors, right? Part of that is just me saying, you know, I'm not liking this, so I need to change something about it. That's why I love, you know, that's why I love going to these meetings. You know, I don't know. People use, and I think it's pretty cool. You remember, you know, Tony from Thursday night. Tony used to be able to tell you that how many days he had sober, right? I've been sober 10,133 days, but, you know, because I got on my knees today. He had this whole speech. And I always thought that was pretty cool, like that he would know how many days. Because when you start saying 10,000 days, that's a pretty cool number. And there are people who run those apps. Like, there are guys, people who run, maybe, I'm sure women, and they can pull up their app and tell you how long At my age today, all my friends, not all my friends, but some of my friends, they have retirement apps, right? They all know when they could retire with full Social Security.
Oh, God.
And they'll say, well, I have to work another so many days, right? Because we're all hitting that, you know, for all of us, it's 2024. Like, well, somewhere 2024 or 2025, depending on when you were born. So it tells you how long you have to work. Those are the type of apps that a lot of us guys are using today. But there's lots of stuff out there that you could do for your sobriety. If that's important to you to log it, for you to see that progress, please use it. Please use it. The only thing I caution you, just like you said, getting stuck on the days, getting stuck on the years, and forgetting that today is important in, you know, how you're doing. I always said, I've said it on this podcast. I say it in my meetings all the time. If I want to know how I'm doing with my program, basically all I need to do is ask my wife, right? She'll tell me how I'm doing, because she'll tell me how I'm behaving, how I'm acting, what's going on. And if I'm not behaving well, then my program's not going well. Plain and simple. I mean, that's just the way it is.
I got a What's Wrong With You on Thursday night.
Okay.
I went to a choral concert from my daughter, and I just was in a lousy mood the rest of the night. And I think the reason was, is I saw some awkward kids on the stage that I could identify with. And that put me in a bad mood. It put me back to where I was in sixth grade. And even though it's been far longer than I'd like to admit that I was in sixth grade, I could feel that feeling again. And my daughter's not one of those kids. She is in a different place, but I could hone in on the awkward looking people, and it's like, oh, I'm there again. And it pissed me off. And so I was pissy to people, and I was short, and I don't like that conversation with my wife when she has to say, you know, what's wrong with you?
No, it's not fun. My wife said to me the other day, because I've been struggling with some stuff, she's like, well, if you're really struggling and unhappy, you should probably think of going to a therapist, you know? And I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, when we're having those type of conversations, then, you know, I need to pay attention to them, right? In the past, I would just blow them off, but I need to pay attention to them. And I did tell her, listen, I go to therapy all the time. I do group therapy. That's part of my AA going. And some of the stuff, not all of my problems are fixable through that program, but a lot, most of them are. And I just want to touch base. Something you just brought to me, and I'm wondering if that's been bothering me lately, is that I recently joined a Facebook group of the grammar school where I grew up. And when I went to grammar school, there wasn't a middle school. So I went to the same school from kindergarten through eighth grade. And got out of there just before. My two youngest sisters went to middle school. But when I graduated, the middle school wasn't, you know, we weren't doing middle school. Anyway, so, and people were posting pictures, and they posted a picture of our eighth grade graduating class. And I hated the way I looked in that. I was this short, I look at that and I feel like I'm the fattest little kid in that picture. Mm-hmm. And it brings me back, just like you said, it brings me back to that place where I just was not a happy kid. I was not a happy kid at all. And it's interesting that you said it. I haven't thought about it much, but I'm wondering if that's been sort of dragging me down, you know, unknowingly, really, like bringing me back to that time of how, just like you, I was so uncomfortable. I wasn't happy in my own skin. And that was it, right? I mean, shortly after that, right? You think about it. That was eighth grade. I was 13 when that picture was taken, I'm sure. Turned 14. By 15, I was drinking on a regular basis. Now that I think about it, I didn't even put those two together. Within 2 years, I was drinking, and shortly after that, I was drinking and drugging on a regular basis, right? So within 3 years of that picture, I was almost drinking and drugging on a daily basis. Almost. Not quite. By the time I was 17. And that's amazing, right? That's amazing. But that tells you what happens, right? That's what we talked about. I hated who I was. I hated how I looked. I hated how I felt. I found booze, and I found pot. And man, I loved it. And it made me feel a lot better. So yeah, I got to look at that. I always got to look at these things of, you know, what's my sobriety like? I agree, when you get to certain ones, you know, when you get to 10, I agree that you get to a 10-year anniversary, it should be celebrated. It should be. And not only for, you know, the people in the room, but also for you.
Yep.
It takes work, man. For those of us who are really afflicted with addiction of any type, whether it's drugs or alcohol or any of the other addictions out there, for those who are really afflicted with those diseases, because I do think they're a disease too, yeah, there is something to be celebrated about not doing it, right? My nature is to drink and cover up my feelings, not to sit with them and feel like shit. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you do. You got to sit and feel like shit because that's what life deals you. But so for me to be able to put together, I guess, same thing, you know, 13 years or 14 years, whatever I'm going on. Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, I'm happy. My wife's happy that I'm sober. She likes me a lot more now than she did before I got sober. My kids too, although they weren't around. They were out of the house during my relapse and during a lot of my bad years. But you know, everybody likes having me around, a sober dad, sober grandpa, you know, for this program. And the fact, and I need to celebrate that and acknowledge that once in a while, right? I can't just blow it off.
Absolutely.
I need to acknowledge it.
Well, we'd like to hear what you want to acknowledge. This is a hot topic for some people. And if you violently disagree with what we have to say, we still want to hear from you. You can email me by going to soberfriendspod.com and emailing me, Matt@soberfriendspod.com. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at soberfriendspod.com. Steve, thanks again for sharing and making this a great show.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for having me.
We'll see everybody next week. Bye, everybody. You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.